coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK, the internet radio of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England. I'm your host, Jamie Krieger. I am pastor of Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cambridge. At Resurrection, we have adult Bible study at 10 a.m. every Sunday while the children are in Sunday school. At 11 a.m., we gather for the Divine Service with Holy Communion. For more information about our congregation, go to resurrectionlutheran.org.uk. I'm also pastor of the Oxford Lutheran Mission. Pastor Tapani Simeoki and myself take turns to meet with the congregation there at 4:30 in the afternoon at St. Michael's and All Angels every second and fourth Sunday of the month. For more information about this, go to oxfordlutheran.co.uk. If you are nowhere near these congregations, go to lutheran.co.uk. This is the website of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, and it has information about all our congregations in England, Wales, and Scotland. I am also manager of Lutheran Radio UK. I hope you enjoy listening to our programs as much as we enjoy producing them for you. Find our entire schedule and the podcasts of all our programs at lutheranradio.co.uk. Today we look at the lessons for the 23rd Sunday after Pentecost. The readings are from the Old Testament, from the book of the prophet Amos, chapter 5, verses 18 through 24. The psalm is 70. The epistle lesson is from 1 Thessalonians, chapter 4, verses 13 through 18. And the gospel lesson is from Matthew, chapter 25, verses 1 through 13. David, welcome back.
It's good to hear your voice again, Jamie. So we're jumping right into the Matthew passage, and this is a parable. And it might be helpful to know that the word parable literally means to throw alongside of. Interesting Greek word. It is a way of making sense of the life of faith by throwing a fictional story alongside actual experience. So the parable of the 10 virgins is, at least in my reading, it's considering the positive place that fear plays in the life of faith. Particularly, the young people that I used to teach would talk about the fear, would talk about FOMO, or the fear of missing out. So I think that's what this parable is. The fictional story of this parable is to try and bring us in imaginatively to experience this fear of missing out. This means that we are to hear this parable and see ourselves not as the wise virgins, but as the foolish ones. And literally in the Greek, the word is called morons. So the parable is teaching us to look at our lives and perhaps recall the moronic things that we've done because we failed Jesus's command to keep watch, which is a very short way of saying pay attention, and especially pay attention to the times in which our own foolishness has produced failure. So what this parable warns against is the opposite of attention, which is distraction. And the fools, or the morons in this case, they were distracted in two ways. First of all, the foolish virgins were distracted from the hard truth that some things in life, represented by the oil, cannot be shared. There are some things in life in which we are completely on our own. No one can do these things for us. No one can breathe for us or eat for us, sleep or die, and no one can suffer the consequences of our foolishness for us. So the first thing that the foolish virgins did not keep watch of was the truth that there are things in life that no one can take our place. We alone, as single individuals, live these experiences of life. The second is that the foolish were not prepared because they failed to understand time. There we are again. All of these passages, as we come to the end of the church year, as we see the fall setting in the northern hemisphere and see how life is giving way to death, understanding time is one of the major themes that these texts deal with. They didn't understand time. Living watchfully in the parable meant being ready for nothing to happen. In other words, those who understand the nature of time will be ready to wait, knowing that the future will come to them. They just have to wait for them. The irony is that the foolish are not prepared to wait, and therefore they're always running out of time. Time is not something the wise run out of, because they are waiting for the celebration to come to them. They're ready to wait in order for the bridegroom to eventually come and bring them to the celebration. It's a very different way of living in time. I know a lot of people feel like this pandemic is stealing time from them, that this is a wasted year or a lost year, when in fact, it's an excellent time to be learning to wait for the things that Jesus promises. So, back to this fear of missing out. We have a fictional story of FOMO, fear of missing out, and that is meant to make us desire to be wise. When you get to the end of the story, no one wants to be the fools. Everyone who reads it says it would be better to be wise. And the way that the parable functions is it makes us desire this wisdom. The Proverbs make it clear that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and that parable generates that fear. This is the fear that Luther recognized had its origin in God's love. And so that as time moves, fear decreases and love increases. And eventually the culmination of this love is the celebration of the eternal wedding feast. So Jesus's words to us are watch, because the wise are those who are capable of waiting for God to act. Now Psalm 70 carries this theme with the instructions that aren't really technically part of the psalm. It says, for the lead player, for David to call to mind. I really like that this psalm gives instructions to the lead musician to play music that calls to mind the truths for David. The musician is being instructed to put into music Jesus' command for us to be watchful. For some way, and I don't know how I would even investigate it, but in some way, music is a mnemonic device in which it helps us call to mind and be watchful for the truth. Now, why David? Because David was the consummate fool in the Old Testament. When he was distracted by pleasure and power, untold pain was the result. David knew that he needed help in being mindful of the things that matter, and the help that he gets in this point is the music of the Psalms. So what is the music to call to mind? There are two themes in the Psalm, that the proud are fools. Even though the proud do not look like foolish when they are experiencing all of their confidence, what the proud don't understand is the nature of time. And when time runs its course, they will be surprised by how suddenly they are turned back on the heels of their shame. So once again, the fools don't understand how time flows. The other surprise is that when time runs its course, it will be the lowly and needy who are filled with the joy of receiving their surprising salvation from the hand of God. David understands. And so he instructs the musicians to keep him mindful of these truths because they are so easily overlooked when we are in the time of waiting. Oftentimes, the waiting feels utterly futile. And so we need the music to keep us watching, to keep us waiting, and to keep us wise. Now, Amos flips the script and he says, God says, I hate your festivals, or we could say, I hate your music. The Psalms see music as a helpful tool of attention. Amos sees the music as a clever way of being distracted. The music of attention and the music of distraction are hard to distinguish, as dividing the foolish virgins were from dividing the wise at first. They were all dressed up with somewhere to go, but only half of them were ready. And as time would run its course, we would know the difference and why there was a difference. There is a worship that keeps us mindful and wise and waiting, but there is also a worship that distracts us from the truth. The worship that keeps us mindful gives us the means to keep watching while waiting for God to act. This kind of worship has its focus first on what God is doing and not on what we desire or what is happening in the world. Those things are important. But the most important thing in waiting is to know that while we do nothing, God is at work. So the difference between the foolish and the wise is how they each view God's righteousness. And righteousness is just a word that means the things that God does to make the wrong world right. And so the wise know that as wrong as the world can be and as wrong as things in our lives could be, if God is at work making things right that are wrong, then the wise can wait. Those who are saved by God's justice, says Amos, desire his righteousness to well up like water and to be like a steady stream. They want God to continue to make right all that is wrong in them and all that is wrong in the world. God's righteousness isn't just an excuse to do what they wanted to do. God's righteousness is a view of the world that gives them the kind of wisdom in which they aren't going to be panicked. They're not going to make false claims or lie or look after themselves. They will wait for God to act. The foolish treat God's righteousness as no big deal, and so it makes no big difference in their lives. And because they cannot wait for God's righteousness, they are unprepared for the future, which is fully determined by God's desire to make right all that is wrong in the world and all that is wrong in each of us. There is a sense that David wants to be mindful of this because, as he said in the Psalms, this is the one truth that makes everything else work in this life. Now, in Thessalonians, Paul takes us one step further, and he says, you know, he would not have us grieve as others do, but those who have without hope. See, everyone grieves. Fools don't pay attention to that. The wise do. Grief is unavoidable, but how we experience grief is very different. It is the moment of grief that distinguishes the foolish from the wise. Fools are not ready for grief because they are distracted by being so busy trying to get as much out of life as they can. Besides, when things are going well, you do not want to be distracted by the reality that grief is coming. They are the proud who presume that their good fortune will last forever. The wise are different from the proud. They are ready for grief because they know that when grief hits, they can wait it out. And they know that because of Christ's resurrection, they are not waiting for nothing. They are waiting for the bridegroom to come to them. Paul sees that everything has changed with Christ's resurrection. In fact, with Paul's first preaching, they thought that he was talking about Jesus as the resurrection. They thought a name for Jesus was resurrection. And that's pretty close to Paul's message, that Christ's death and resurrection has changed the world radically, and the wise will live in the light of the resurrection. Fools will not. As I said, the big difference the resurrection makes in this world is that the wise are able to grieve in a wise way. The dark troughs the wise know can be endured because life is coming to them. They are not going to life. The most important message of life is that Christ is coming to us, and therefore the most important act in life is for us to be capable of waiting. That demands an eternal wisdom. That is the wisdom of the resurrection, that death is not what it once was. Grief has been changed, and because death has been changed. Now death is but a sleep, and there's no better way to wait for something good to happen than to be sleeping. And then you wake up, and it has taken place quite apart from any of our own efforts. Death is now a sleep. It isn't the end of life. The Latin phrase, which is translated rest in peace, is now commonly inscribed on tombstones. But it wasn't always this way. It became common around 700 years after Christ's resurrection. And it was a way of concisely expressing how the resurrection changes our experience of grief. That beautiful phrase, rest in peace, now is commonly used on tombstones by Christians and non-Christians alike. And it reflects the deep human desire to receive the consolation of the resurrection. Paul experienced a kind of FOMO, fear of missing out, not because he feared for himself that he would miss out. Paul feared that others would not know the truth of the resurrection and that they would miss out on all the wisdom that that truth would give to them. They would miss out on the way to have their grief transfigured and to have death changed to sleep. He hoped, and his hope was evident in his instruction, he hoped that by watching how Christians experience grief in the light of the resurrection, others who were missing out might also desire to become wise in the same way that the parable is inciting in us a desire to be wise like the wise virgins.
Thank you once again, David. This is as much as we can do today. I pray this has been very useful to our listeners. Just reminding our listeners that the podcasts of this program, Worth Doing Badly, are available online on our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app for mobile phones. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the one that is right for you to listen to us on the go. David, once again, thank you very much. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.